Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday night. It is 11:30, and this is Matt Chat live on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Ace Diamond, and tonight I'm going to be talking about what is somewhat of a dying art that honestly for a long time I thought was completely dead, but has recently seen a resurgence in professional wrestling, and that is tag team wrestling. When I was younger, when I was started watching wrestling, you had teams like Mike Rotunda, Barry Windham, the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff, Brutus Beefcake and Greg the Hammer Valentine, the Hart Foundation. On that note, I do want to say, rest in peace, Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Another death in the professional wrestling brotherhood that completely shocking when I heard about it this morning when I woke up. And I really don't know what else to say about it other than that. A couple years later, you had Demolition came along, the Can-Am Connection, and then Strike Force, the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers, and of course, in the NWA, you had the Midnight Express, both versions, the Rock and Roll Express, the Fantastics, how could I forget those guys? Of course, the Road Warriors. And then later on, you have the Steiner Brothers and the Varsity Club. And now, fast forward to now, you've got around the world, you've got, well, just in WWE, you've got New Day. You've got, I forgot to mention one of my favorites. You had the Freebirds. Can't mention New Day without mentioning the Freebirds. But you got the New Day, Usos, the Revival, Gallows and Anderson, who are being woefully misused. I mean, it's almost criminal how misused Anderson and Gallows are. They had one tag team title run, and that was ended in that fatal four-way at WrestleMania. And they have not even sniffed a tag team title run since then. And that was WrestleMania 33. You've got in Impact, you've got OVE. Got to give love to my Ohio boys. You've got LAX. You've got the Cult of Lee. And over in Japan, you've got Evil and Sonata. You've got the Young Bucks. I would catch Seven Shades of Hell if I didn't mention the Young Bucks. Probably the best tag team in the world right now. They're not exactly my favorites, but they are probably the best tag team in the world right now are the Young Bucks. You've got Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Lance Archer, the Killer Elite Squad. You've got, I mean, there's just a multitude of great tag teams all over the world right now. And, you know, for a lot of years, that wasn't the case in WWE. I guess Impact had a decent tag team division at the time. I don't know. I really didn't pay attention. But tag team wrestling has gone up and down over the years. And it's really something that should have stayed up, in my opinion, because tag team wrestling is a great form of professional wrestling. And I'm actually going to bring a guest on to talk about it. We may get off topic, but that's okay. But Keith Preston, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Colin. Thanks for having me. How you doing, man?
Good.
Good deal. So you're talking tag team wrestling right now?
Yes.
Okay, well,
you know, I decided I'm going to do topics 3 or 4 nights a week and then have a guest 1 or 2 nights a week.
Sounds like
just
fun.
To keep things interesting.
Yeah, mix it up.
Exactly.
Have you mentioned Jim Neidhart yet?
Yes, I did. That was so sad when I woke up this morning and heard about that.
Yeah, and I mean, I've always said my two favorite tag teams were Midnight Express, Bobby and Stan version, and the Hart Foundation. Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart just were exactly what a tag team should be, in my opinion.
Great, absolutely, and the Hart Foundation were always my favorite tag team growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, I didn't watch the NWA. I lived in a house where it was basically dictated I watched one or the other.
Oh, well.
So I always chose to watch WWF over the NWA.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching the network now, I think I made the wrong decision.
Well, fortunately, my stepfather didn't have a lot of great qualities, but one of the few was that he was a huge wrestling fan. and I had already watched wrestling as a kid before my mom was with him. But then, after he came into the house, wrestling was pretty much on all the time. I mean, it was, the mid 80s. So that was during the huge wrestling blow up when you could literally watch 70 hours of wrestling a week, just depending on where you were in the United States. But, we didn't get as much NWA cause I lived, in the Northeast upstate New York, but we did get Worldwide. And then TBS eventually made its way out to us. So, yeah, I just, before I got to see the NWA, the Hart Foundation was my top tag team. I was so upset when Strikeforce beat them for the belts, even though I loved Tito Santana and Rick Martel. But once I got exposed to the NWA more, I loved Bobby and Stan a lot. And I was already familiar with Stan Lane from Memphis because we got Memphis on FNN Score, which was like the sports channel for the Financial News Network, oddly enough. And they showed Memphis wrestling. So yeah,
that's interesting.
The 80s were a crazy time for wrestling on TV, man. It was everywhere. So yeah. But, I don't know, man. I'm not as up on current wrestling as I should be, unless it's the indie stuff, because I run a promotion. But I'm in the middle of watching the 2014 season of NXT. So if you want to talk about the Vaudevillians and Ascension, that's kind of all gone to the wayside. But
I took a break from watching wrestling on a regular basis from, I want to say, around the middle of 98 to about 2002.
Right.
Because we didn't have cable.
The
Attitude Era.
Right. That's what I was thinking, the end of the Attitude Era. NWA or WCW just gone out of business, right? Like 2001,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So it was pretty much WWF, WWE dominance at that point.
Exactly.
But I go through periods of time where I don't get to watch wrestling because of cable issues. But now we've got a Roku, so there's all kinds of stuff on there that's not super expensive, and we got Hulu, so I was like, man, I can catch up on everything on this. But there's so much, like NXT seasons are 50 episodes with, and then a couple takeovers thrown in there too that are 2 hours long, so it's just like, it's gonna take me
right.
but yeah, I mean, I heard you mention the Killer Elite Squad. I loved those guys when they were in Ring of Honor. I know that they're both mainly based in Japan, but I feel like Vance Archer and Davey Boy Smith Jr. really were kind of squandered in the United States by the WWE, and they could have been a lot bigger stars here than they were given a chance to. So.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I mean, Davey Boy Jr. had his father's name to go off of, and not that that should be a. Not that that should be a factor, but
it's going to be interesting to
that
see
name
where
recognition.
Brian Pillman Jr. goes.
Absolutely.
Speaking of Hart Foundation guys.
And actually, I need to message him because I've been trying to have him on the show for several months and we just haven't been able to work anything out. So I need to message him soon to see if we can.
I remember I remember when he was first getting into it and stuff, and there was some talk that he wasn't properly trained and whatnot. But from what I heard, he got some training with Lance Storm, and then he went down to OVW and trained more. So I think that was more just people not looking into the background of it enough. And
exactly.
From what I've seen in his matches, he knows what he's doing. Somebody trained him. You know, so yeah, I mean, you can cover
up a certain
amount with athleticism, but
yeah,
but you can't cover it all up. So
no. Yeah, I think you know, that's a you mentioned, and Brian Pillman reminds me of a team that I didn't even mention, the Hollywood Blondes.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Brian Pillman,
I mean,
and
the Hollywood Blondes,
Steve Austin.
Yeah. Hollywood Blondes weren't together for very long, but it seemed like they really made an impact.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the thing is, they were thrown together. They were a tag team that was just kind of thrown together, and then they were like, hey, we like working with each other, and they came up with a whole gimmick pretty much on their own, which is, you know, it seems like that's a theme with Steve Austin. And so...
Hey, whatever
Ooh,
works.
And speaking of, yeah. And speaking of tag teams, I recently found out, because I've been watching old NXT matches, that Tyler Breeze, they told him that they didn't have anything for him, and that if he didn't want to be released, he had to come up with something. And he came up with the Tyler Breeze gimmick all on his own, based on, you know, his love for Shawn Michaels and kind of like an updated version of that. And I know Fandango's hurt right now, but I really think the two of them are a really good tag team. They just have to be given
the
right chance.
Oh, they are. They're a great tag team. They're great for comedy also, which,
yeah,
I'm not a huge fan of comedy, but they make it work, and I actually enjoy.
Yeah, it depends
them.
On how far the comedy goes. You know, I love Stan Styles, and he's a good wrestler, but his whole whipped cream and shake weight thing kind of overshadows the whole deal. But if you watch his matches are really, really good. I think that if you can back it up, if you can back up the comedy with good wrestling, then it's fine. You know, I think we're you know, obviously decades away from midgets biting people on the butt, but there's always room for everything. You know, it's what makes the world go round, is a little bit of flavor for everybody. You know,
absolutely, a little bit of variety never hurt anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what tag teams are you digging right now, man?
Right now, the Usos.
Sure.
Evil and Sonata in Japan. They are. If the Young Bucks are the best team, then Evil and Sonata are right there behind them. Quickly catching up with them, I think.
Sure. I mean, I feel like... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let's see. I'm trying to think. Who else am I really... Who else do I really like right now? Oh, like I mentioned, Gallows and Anderson.
Oh, sure.
Like I said, they're... gravely misused.
Right.
And being from Carl Anderson's hometown,
Chad Aguilera.
I gotta be a fan of his, and I really wish they would use him better, especially.
I feel like the WWE doesn't know what to do with, like, the serious brawler guys. Like, I feel like if Bruiser Brody was alive and he got signed to a WWE contract, they wouldn't know how to use it. It just seems like they took Tenzai and they made him, like, the hip-hop hippo and Vance Archer. They had him kill guys for a while, but then he just became a big jobber you know, and they definitely are not using Anderson and Gallows to their potential. And when Gallows was there before, they had him as Festus. You know, it just seems like they don't know what to do other than Brock Lesnar. But, I mean, he kind of dictates his own path.
Exactly.
You know,
I think he's got creative control over.
Yeah. It just seems like they used to be so good at the monsters, but all their monsters were silly. You know, Kamala and Kabuki and Killer Khan and, you know, it's just they don't know how to use like a serious brawler. They just don't know how to do it. And I don't get it. I don't understand. And I love technical wrestling, but to be completely honest, a good brawler, I mean, a good, serious, hard-nosed puncher, I mean, they ruined Dr. Death when he came to the WWE. It's just they just don't know what to do with that kind of a guy. They did good with Duggan. Duggan had a whole character behind him, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't get it, but it's like they don't know how to sell that character. It's strange. I don't understand. I remember seeing Chad Aguilera on an NWA Indiana show. He was in like a 5-way match for their junior heavyweight title, and it was a crazy, like, everybody jumping over the top rope, but it was fun, and I was like, that guy is really good. And then I kind of lost track of him, had no idea that he went to Japan and became Carl Anderson. Didn't know they were the same guy at all until like a couple of years ago, like right before he joined the WWE, I found out that he was the same guy. So
yeah, I actually know his trainer and a lot of the guys that he came up with,
right,
in the business. And so it's fun, and they're a fun group to be around. So.
Sure. Who did train him?
Roger Ruffin here in Cincinnati.
Oh, sure. Sure. Okay. I'm familiar with him. Cool. Good deal. Yeah.
So other than the Midnight Express, by the way, I preferred the Dennis and Bobby version over the Stan and Bobby.
I think Stanley had more flash, man. I just think it was kind of the same moves, but Stan put like a sexy spin on it, I guess. You know, I don't know, man.
I love the Road Warriors, though. So
sure. Yeah,
and
you know what the thing is about the Road Warriors? I always loved Hawk, but I just always thought Animal. When I was a kid, it was always, you know, what wrestlers could make me like pop up and go, whoa. And the Road Warriors were big, but I didn't feel like Animal did much in the ring. And now, you know, as a grown man, I can look back and see that he did some pretty amazing stuff, and that Hawk jumping up in the air and doing a fist drop. I mean, that's, you know, but I guess even then it's like what popped me was some of the flashier stuff, and the Road Warriors just weren't flashy. Plus they beat up Kurt Hennig a lot, and I love Kurt Hennig. So I was like, quit beating up Kurt Hennig.
Right?
Yeah.
He did seem to take a lot of their abuse.
Well, yeah, in the early days in the AWA, they had a feud with Kurt and Larry. And there was one point where they had tied Kurt Hennig up in the top rope and middle rope and took a chair and just completely unprotected, just bashed him right on top of the head with it. It was like so much blood. It's like, geez, man, I hate these guys. Plus, they ended Bobby and Stan's tag team title reign without, you know, with a match that was barely a match. They just beat the crap out of them. It's like, man. But no, I mean, looking back on it, the Road Warriors were definitely like game changers in wrestling for sure. I do remember Hawk taking a pile driver from Jerry Lawler and popping right up. And Jerry Lawler turned around and being like, whoa. And they said it was because his pectoral muscles were so huge that he didn't feel the effects of the pile driver. Thought that was neat.
Yeah. I actually had the opportunity to co-host a podcast with a friend who was interviewing Animal.
Oh, that's cool.
And
very cool.
Oh, it gets bad. After the podcast was over, my friend called me and told me Animal said you were hokey.
That sucks.
So that's kind of my last. Impressions of Animal. But
yeah. Ooh,
they're still one of my favorite tag teams of all time.
Sure. When I was like 15, I went to an NWA show at the Syracuse Fairgrounds, and a lot of the wrestlers just came out to the entranceway, like where the fans came in to get on the bleachers. And for whatever reason, my seat was right next to the entranceway. So every time someone came out to watch the matches, I saw them come out and went down and tried to talk to them. Nobody would really talk to us, though. Like, Animal was there, and his arm was as big as my face. I remember that. The only people who said anything, really, though, were Ric Flair asked me to move so we could watch Sting wrestle. And Ole Anderson actually took a second and talked to everybody. And I said, man, you know, you should come back and reform the Four Horsemen. And he said, I'm thinking about it. And then, of course, he did. So I felt like I had, you know, put that idea in his head, not knowing, you know, I was 15, that he probably was slated to do that long time before I said anything to him. But it was strange, man. No one wanted to talk to anybody. Jim Cornette was huge, so much bigger than I thought he was. And that's when I was like, man, people on TV are just big. But, I went down when Animal was watching the matches and, you know, tried to shake his hand. He didn't shake my hand. He just kind of stood there. They all just kind of stood there and ignored us. It's pretty weird. I don't know. I don't know if that's indicative of their personality or if they were just not trying to be mobbed or what. I don't know. It's just strange.
Yeah, I've met Cornette. Cornette's a great guy.
Yeah, I didn't. Like I said, I didn't really get to meet him. I just stood in front of him for a second, and
I don't necessarily agree with all of his views on professional wrestling, but
sure,
Cornette's a great guy.
I mean, I agree on Cornette's views as far as wanting wrestling to be more realistic. But all the guys that he has problems with, and he hates this guy because of this and that and the other. Like I said, different flavors for everybody, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've met AJ Styles at a show once.
Nice.
Super nice guy.
Yeah.
Actually, I met AJ Styles twice in the span of a week, and he remembered me the second time from the first time.
Oh, that is cool, man.
And
yeah,
the
cool
first time was at a Ring of Honor show.
Okay.
The second time was at a local indie show, and he remembered me from the Ring of Honor show.
Nice.
Which that was really cool.
Yeah, very cool. I always wonder if I'm a memorable person. Sometimes I kind of fade in the background, and then other times I'm like, rah, in your face. So it just depends on what piece is coming out at the time, you know?
I try to fade into the background sometimes, and it doesn't always work.
Right. But yeah, man, I mean, growing up in the late 70s and throughout the 80s, tag team wrestling was a big deal. You know, it was the British Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation, the Road Warriors, the Midnight Express. And it seemed like for the longest time, you know, the Rockers, the Midnight Rockers. It seemed like for the longest time, tag teams would be put together, and then they would just split them up. They even tried to do it with the Dudleys, but it just didn't work. And I don't understand. There used to be guys who would be a tag team for their whole entire career, for the most part, you know, and then sometimes a single star would break out of it. But you had teams like the Road Warriors who stayed a tag team for decades. Rock and Roll Express, they split up for a little while, but they're still teaming now. And I just wonder if any of the tag teams these days are going to last that long other than the Usos, because, I mean, they're twin brothers, so I can't imagine they're not
going to be a tag team for... I can't imagine they'll ever not be a tag team.
Right. And the Hardys, I mean, every time they try to split the Hardys always come back around because they're brothers.
Exactly. I think they'll end up, even though they're on different shows right now, I think they'll end up back together before too long.
I wonder if the physical problems with Matt are true. Like,
you know, I've heard that, but I've heard about those issues, but every time I turn on Raw, he's wrestling. So it's like,
there he is. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, hey, I'm thinking about retiring.
If those issues are that severe, why are you still wrestling?
Yeah. I mean,
although they did lose tonight and they aren't involved in the tag team title picture at SummerSlam. So maybe that is their cue for him to take some much-needed time off.
Right.
Or maybe tonight was his last match.
Yeah. And I mean, when you think about it.
I don't see Matt Hardy being a guy who goes out with a lot of fanfare. I think I see him being as one of those guys that just fades away.
Kind of goes home, yeah. I mean, the crazy thing is Matt Hardy has been doing big time wrestling since he was 18.
Right.
You know, and then once they really, really got over, he was doing all those crazy ladder matches and stuff. I mean, he's got to be beat to death, you know, he's really, really just got to, you know, it's probably time or getting close to time for him to wrap it up. Hey, buddy.
Yeah, I think
my son just came in the room.
I think it is about time for Matt Hardy to call it a career, and Jeff too, for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff's a couple years younger, but he's been doing it just as long. So,
yeah, they're both in their early 40s. So.
Right.
Of course, then you get guys like Triple H and Undertaker who just don't seem to know how to walk away.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like when Randy Orton was doing the Legend Killer thing, Undertaker probably should have lost to Randy Orton, then maybe gave it a couple more years and then been done. It's just crazy that he still wrestles and still comes back, and I mean, it's just nuts. You know, the fact that he wrestles at...
He's in his 50s. He's in his early 50s.
Yeah,
he's 52 or 53.
Man.
53, I believe, now.
That's crazy. Yeah, I can't imagine. But Ric Flair did it forever, you know. And they tried to retire
Ric Flair did it into his
TNA.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ric Flair did
it
into his 60s. So...
And, I mean, when was Lou Fez's last match? I know it was in Japan, right? He was in his 70s.
I believe Lou Fez was over 70 when he had his last match.
Yeah, so some guys, mm-hmm. I mean. But the thing about it is the Undertaker is definitely, like, his best days are behind him, you know? I mean, it's just rough.
I hate to say
now.
This because I love the Undertaker. His best days were behind him 10 years ago.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, there's a lot to respect there. You know, the fact that he wrestled that Hell in a Cell match with a broken foot. I mean, it's just, you know, climbed a steel cage with a broken foot and then, like, threw Cactus Jack off it. But, I mean,
yeah.
But, you know, it's just, yeah, it's definitely time. It's definitely time for him to call it a career.
But as somebody who follows indie wrestling a lot closer than I do,
sure,
are there any guys that you see that could be a breakout team?
I'm sorry, I missed the last part. My son was being
Are there any guys that you could see being a breakout team?
Oh, man. Well, not to, you know, but there's a team. They're actually the WFW Tag Team Champions called Wet Dream. And I know that that seems kind of like I'm putting my own company over. But they have, like, great size. They interact with the crowd really well. And they do really, really innovative stuff. Like, stuff that you wouldn't necessarily normally see guys their size doing. And the one guy, Daniel Winchester, has a really, really good amateur background in Colorado, I believe, is where he came from. But now he lives in Cleveland, in, like, the Cleveland area. But, yeah, the Wet Dream, if they stick to it and stay a tag team, I mean, something could definitely happen there. I still really, really love the Whirlwind Gentlemen out in California. I wish that that they got more recognition than they do because they're really, really good. Trying to think who else. There's a lot of good tag teams out there. It's hard to Bomb Shelter. I mean, the way that Joseph Schwartz has reinvented himself is amazing. Like, he started out as a comedy act, and now he's just does this whole psychological villain type, time traveling villain thing, and it worked. I mean, it's got him bookings all over the country now. So, and I'm trying to think if there's more guys to mention. I mean, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's hundreds, you know.
I think, no, there's three guys that you're familiar with a couple of the names, but I don't
sure.
think you've ever actually been able to see them live yet, and I'm working on that. They call themselves the Top Guns.
Okay.
It's Mark Magnum, Ryan Michaels, and Eric Fallen. They recently came together as a group.
Okay.
Michaels and Fallen had teamed before.
Okay.
And Fallen just recently joined them, and I think the three of them are... I think they could be... 10 years ago, they could have been as big as the New Day.
Sure.
But on a much more serious level.
Right.
So more like the Freebirds.
Okay. Love the Freebirds. So
absolutely love the Freebirds, and I can't believe I initially forgot to mention them when I was listing off the great tag teams of the 80s.
Oh, yeah, the Freebirds are one of the best ever. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
But I just thought of a couple other tag teams. The Axemen, Clint Poe and Mark Houston, two big bruisers who've been around for a while. They do a lumberjack deal, which is – I kind of like throwback stuff like that, lumberjacks and cowboys, and, you know, gives a little more personality to things. And Mike Brody – has started teaming with Wade Castle, and they're called the Unholy Alliance. They are vicious. They're just they both have technical skill, you know, as far as mat wrestling and submission work, but their knees and elbows and just crazy. Just watching them beat the hell out of kids.
I'm very familiar with Mike Brody.
Yeah.
I've known him for, oh, he's amazing.
Yeah.
I've known him for going on 10 years, I would think. I think probably 8 years
right.
or so.
And it's good for Wade to be with him because, you know, Wade's four years
absolutely.
In the business. And Mike's a vet, and they do have a similar style, though. I mean, they work really well together as a tag team. So
that is a tag team I'll have to check out one of these days.
Yeah, you should. I know they're based in Tough right now, but they're trying to get out to other bookings. So, once Wade gets done with his single stuff in WFW, which is kind of hard because of the building, I'm not getting to run as often as I want to, but I definitely want to bring them in. I think them and Wet Dream would be a crazy match. So I'd like to see who comes out on top in that one.
I think, now having not seen them, but knowing a little bit about both competitors or both team members, I think Kid Bullet and Justin Dream, although they seem to be just a thrown together tag team, I think they'll be.
Yeah, well, what happened was there were some people who didn't show up. They had car trouble. The Michigan car did not make it to the show. And I had advertised a four-corner match, so I wanted to at least get another team in there. And Kid Bullet had shown up to help Cody Hawk with his seminar. Justin Dream had shown up to take the seminar. And I asked them if they wanted to work, how they felt they would do as a tag team, and they were both down for it. And the match is great. That match, I'll send you a link to the show so you can check out that match. You can check out the whole show. But, they gelled really, really well. And they did some very cool stuff. And, yeah, I think they're going to be a really good tag team. I'm planning on keeping them together. Hopefully they can get out and work as a tag team in other places because they did really well as a tag team. They both said it felt good. They both said that it was comfortable. So, yeah. I'm hoping that because, you know, some guys couldn't make it to their booking, that I put together something that's going to be successful for both of them. Because they did well, man.
That would be awesome.
They looked like they should have been a tag team for years, you know? So it was good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
my friend, I'm about out of time.
All right.
So I want to thank you for calling in and coming on. And
yeah, it's fun.
Absolutely,
man.
I'm looking forward to hopefully making it in December.
Great.
Weather and transportation permitting.
right. It's
so,
the end of December, so hopefully the weather will be decent.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Hopefully. So, but my friend, thanks again, and I will talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Bye. Have a good night. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Keith Preston, promoter for WF World's Finest Wrestling in Connersville, Indiana. And that was a very good conversation about tag team wrestling. So, but like I said, we're about out of time. So I want to thank Preston for calling in. And
talk to everybody tomorrow night. Have a good night, everybody.